We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome to the Her Hoop Stats podcast. I'm Gabe Ibrahim, bringing you a special edition of the show to pick the WNBA All-Star rosters. And to help me do that, I've brought in Kevin Pelton from ESPN. He writes about the NBA and the WNBA, and our very own Richard Cohen, who is going for, this is like your record Her Hoop Stats podcast appearance. I think this is like 4 or 5 for you.
Obviously, I'm the cheapest.
Availability is the best ability.
Wait, how much am I supposed to be getting paid for this?
All right, I'm the equal cheapest.
Everyone's equally cheap on this podcast, guys. They hate to break it to everyone. But yeah, we're here. We're going to do all the all-star picks. And I have some questions. So I think the way we should do this, as I was explaining before we got on, like, I think 3 people picking is like too much, because then we just all give our picks and that's it. So I'm going to kind of be not picking, and I have my picks, so I will disagree vehemently with everyone else. But I think we're going to kind of do you two picking. I'll be more of the middle ground debater, trying to toss in grenades to make it more inflammatory. And we'll get started with the guards, but I do have some questions for you guys. So I was wondering, like, did you guys have a methodology, or is it just kind of like, you know, an all-star when you see it? So Kevin, did you have a methodology?
So my philosophy has always been sort of like, if we were picking a team of the best players to win a game right now, you know, sort of setting aside short-term injuries, who are the players I would pick? So obviously that's weighted more heavily towards this season, but it's not exclusively on this season. Okay. If someone comes out and has a hot, you know, and we're up to now a sample size of what, like, you know, almost half the season, I guess, in most of these teams' case, but, you know, there's still fluke performances. And so I am inclined to put a little more weight on what players have done in the past than I think most people have, as opposed to just picking straight based on the first 16, 15 games of this season.
And what about you, Richard?
I'd lean a little more the other way. And these are the games we're supposed to be picking all-stars based on. So these are the ones I'll focus on. If someone's been hot for 10 to 15 games, then they're going to be in, because that's what we've got to look at. But if there's a tiebreaker, then I agree. Then yeah, maybe you look more at history, because these are used as sort of as something that you write in the line in the player's career history when it comes to the end of their career, and you're looking for a Hall of Fame resume or anything like that. So it does come up, and it does sort of kind of matter at the end when you're looking at what they achieved.
Except, as we discussed last year, in all the years where the WNBA decides not to pick an all-star team.
Yeah, this is the worst league for that example, but it's still true to an extent. Yeah.
Well, I guess that was my other question. I mean, Richard, can I answer it? Like, how important is All-Star? How much should we care about this process? I guess Richard just answered it. So, Kevin, if you have a take on that, I'd love to hear it.
I mean, it's interesting. Like, when I was doing these picks, I didn't really care about it. But there's obviously a couple of players who we know are going to be part of this process from a legacy standpoint in terms of Subert, Diana Taurasi. I don't know about Sylvia Fowles at this point, since unfortunately she may not be able to actually play in the game with her injury, but you got to assume that there's going to be some waiting. I know Richard had a tweet about that a couple weeks ago, right?
Oh, I mean, if they were to miss out, then I would fully expect Bird at the very least to be put in by the commissioner in the same way that Nowitzki and Wade were back when the NBA did it a few years back. Fowles obviously is a little more complicated because she's been hurt recently, and Taurasi's a little more complicated because we don't know whether she's retiring or not. So do you put someone in when it might not be their last year? I think the voters are probably going to sort it out for them anyway, but we'll see.
Yeah, and to that end, like, Sue Bird and Sylvia Fowles are both in the top 10 of fan voting. And in fairness, like, there's a case that Sylvia Fowles' game performance puts her into the All-Star game category. So it's not quite like the Wade and Nowitzki thing, where both those guys were, as much as I love Dwayne Wade, as you can see him over my shoulder, they weren't performing at an All-Star level, whereas Sylvia Fowles is, and Sue Bird is not. But I think you're right. I think the voters are going to sort it out, and that Sue and Syl would both be in, and then we'll have to deal with a possible injury, an injury replacement there. And this actually brought up my third question I was going to ask, like, you guys already mentioned the honorary spots. I'm with Richard. Like, I think the commissioner should just say, hey, Sue, Syl, and maybe Diana are all in, just for the sake of making that easy so that everyone can focus on players who have performed to an All-Star level. But there's also, you know, the problem with games missed. You know, you have someone like Alea Deledon, again, in the top 10 of voting. She's only played 11 games this year. She's sitting on another one tonight, which was last night for you guys listening. She's sitting on another game, and it's not her fault that she has to manage this back injury. But is there a threshold for either of you on games missed? And how much do you, like, weigh that in terms of this rather than, you know, something like an MVP?
Not very much. I mean, I think that gets to the idea of, you know, I know the All-Star when I see one. And the other aspect of it is, you know, a player can still be very valuable while missing that many games. I mean, Deledon's top 20 in overall warp for me. So wins above replacement player, which factors in time on the court. So, you know, I think she was an easy call for me. I think some of these maybe, you know, affect starter versus reserve.
Yeah, I have it like in as a factor, but not as a major one. It's sort of a decider if you're sort of picking between starters and reserves, or maybe if someone's on the fringe of reserves or not making it, then it comes in as an element, but not a huge one. And there's a lot of players this year, because with COVID and protocols, who've missed like 2-3 games out of 15. And so it sort of all evens out, because there are so many who've just missed a couple. And then you sort of think, well, in that case, everyone's on a fairly similar level. Deledon's the only one really who's missed a significant chunk and is still a candidate.
Yeah, I was asking because I had trouble with Deledon, thinking about, you know, the game she's missed. I'm with you, though. I think for All-Star, it probably matters a little bit less. Could you explain warp, though, Kevin? Because I see it all the time. I've never asked what it actually means, but could you explain, just like in layman's terms, what warp is?
Yeah, so the concept is that a player's value to their team is based on two factors: how much they play and how much they play better than the concept of, you know, someone you could sign as a street free agent. That's the replacement level player in those minutes. So, you know, I think historically, a lot of stats early on kind of focused on, well, how much better is a player than average? And that's the way we came up with their value, factoring in both their playing time and how well they played. And that isn't a very good method, because playing a lot of minutes at league average is actually really useful to teams, because it means you're not, you know, putting that replacement level player on the court. So it's really valuable, I think, in the case of, you know, situations like Adela Dawn, where, you know, her playing time is limited for these specific factors. how much still is she helping the team when you factor in that there's, you know, this extra handful of games where Washington is playing. I mean, they, in their specific case, it's not based on a specific replacement player like Myesha Hines-Allen and in the Mystics case, or, you know, Tiana Hawkins. It's a generic average of what you'd expect from a replacement level player across all of it. But that's kind of a way to understand Delhadon's value relative to someone who's, you know, played more minutes, but maybe at a slightly lower level.
All right. Okay. So that's all my preliminary stuff. You guys want to get into the picks?
Go for it.
All right. I'll let Richard, since you've been on this podcast so many times, you get to pick. Are we going front court or back court first for the starters?
Why don't we go with the guards first?
All right. Guards. Okay. Guards. Yeah. That's what we call them. All right. So in the guards, give me, we'll just start with one pick and then we'll see. Or should we actually give me all four of your guard starters?
You got Kevin.
All right, I've got Skylar Diggins-Smith, Sabrina Ionescu, Kelsey Plum, and Courtney Vandersloot.
All right, Richard.
Well, the thing is, I had two who were definitely in. Only one of whom was one of Kevin's, funnily enough. And then I had two more from any of six. So the two I had in were Plum and Chelsea Gray.
Okay.
Who I have both have starting, and then I won't name all the others yet to keep some suspense for later on. But yeah, Ionescu, Vandersloot, and Diggins-Smith are all in the group of other people I would be picking starters from.
That's interesting. I had Gray, I guess, much lower among the guard group. I mean, I not to spoil it, I do think she's an all-star, but I had her behind several other people.
Yeah, why is Chelsea Gray a starter for you?
I think, but well, I'm sure we'll talk about it later on, but I think Vegas's starting perimeter of Plum, Gray, and Jackie Young all together. Although Plum's obviously been electric as a scorer, they're hard to separate as a group. They've been so effective as a group. They're all doing their jobs defensively as well. And Gray is still the metronome that keeps things running for them, even though Plum has just as many assists this season. I think she's been as good as anybody, and Vegas have been so good that I had both of them.
I just think you could extend that. You mentioned the backcourt. You could say that about Vegas's entire starting five. I mean, obviously Asia is like the probably the most valuable of this group, but we're going to hear a lot of Ace's names as we go through this list.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about how many All-Stars one team should have, because you can definitely make a case for all five from Vegas.
Yeah, I have all five on the universal list of players I was considering. I am surprised that Chelsea Gray's up there for you, because I think you're right. It's hard to separate them. It's hard, too, because it feels like in certain games, one of them takes over and then the other ones kind of, you know, fill in the other roles. I don't know who were the Aces playing in their last game. It was the Wings, maybe.
That was the day game they played. The maybe Wings was their last game, the Jessica Shepherd game, right?
Yes. The Jess Shepherd game. Shouts to Jess Shepherd, who is not gonna be
who had 22 and 18 and no one's gonna care in the slightest. Yeah.
Poor Jess Shepherd. That might be her last mention on this podcast, but good for her. Regardless though, I feel like in that game, Gray had a much bigger impact, rather than Plummer Young, not because of the scoring, just because Gray was, like you're saying, controlling the pace there. But then there's other games, it is Plummer Young. I'm surprised that Young was not on either of your lists, because Jackie Young kind of dominated the headlines early on this year. I thought she was playing the best basketball in like that first, I don't know, six or seven games out of any three of those guards.
Jackie Young's in the front court, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, but that's where she is in the ballot.
Yeah, she's a guard.
The shrug.
If you're gonna put the formation as two guards and three front court, then you have to call three of the players that start on the team front court players. So
I agree with this assessment, but in this particular case, at least for the starters, I had to take the position seriously.
So yeah, I was taking them seriously. I'm taking them more seriously than the league when they assign the damn letters.
I think that's a totally fair point. But Jackie Young is a guard, so I was surprised. Who is your fourth, Kevin? You had Plum, Sabrina, Skylar,
and Sloot.
And Sloot. Okay, Courtney Vandersloot.
Fair.
And well, I guess we can move over to Plum since she's on both your lists. Is any of this surprising to either of you, her production so far this year?
I mean, part of it is just the increased minutes, but, you know, I saw her play, obviously, a lot at UW, covered mm-hmm. some of her senior season, and her ability to score at all three levels was really incredible. You know, she rated as, you know, projected to the WNBA as one of the best draft picks in recent memory. And then, you know, she had that stretch in San Antonio, and the, you know, even the first year in Vegas was really up and down. And it was like, is this ever going to happen? And comes back from the Achilles and puts it all together. And she's somehow been even better this year. Mm-hmm. So yes and no, I guess is the answer to, is this surprising? No from college, but yes from her early WNBA career.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's like we saw with Diggin Smith as well, to a certain extent, who had a very slow start as a pro. That sometimes it does just take a couple of years for players to sort it out at the next level. And I think it's maybe the slightly surprising part is that she's playing such heavy minutes and the efficiency hasn't dropped off at all from last year when she won sixth woman of the year. You would expect that at least there'd be some kind of diminishing returns, but it hasn't. I mean, it isn't yet another player that we see peak at 27, 28, assuming this is a peak, which does happen over and over and over again. You look at the numbers and that comes up a lot. So this could be this year and sort of next year or two could be the best we ever see from Kelsey Plum, but she's been very, very good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Kevin too. Like, it's not surprising. I kind of expected it. I just didn't expect her to get all of this opportunity, I guess, because there are so many mouths to feed in Vegas, and the answer so far for Vegas is just feed everyone and they kill people.
Well, they're partly helped by having absolutely no bench, so they've got five players to feed and that's it.
But that works. Well, it may work. We'll see what happens.
For now. Yeah, I mean, as long as the five stay healthy, you're fine. Once any of them don't, you start to get a little thin. You see Teresa Plaisance playing the three. So, yeah. Last thing on Plum, I think she was helped by the three-on-three play as well. But you have to be very direct and mm-hmm. take responsibility in that version of the game, because there aren't many people out there. So you just have to produce the offense and be aggressive immediately. And, yeah, she's taken that on into the five-on-five.
Yeah, and the other two players, Alicia Gray and Jackie Young, who are on the perimeter from that team, also seem to have that mentality as well. I mean, Steph Dolson kind of plays the same way she always has, but that's fine. That works. So, Kevin, could you rank your starting guards here?
I mean, I think Skylar was maybe the easiest call just from that standpoint of she's been very good this season and very good forever. I mean, we talked about Kelsey Plum's development. Richard listed the past examples, including her. I mean, Sabrina is also, like, you know, had been okay last season coming back from the injury. And we felt like, you know, she wasn't completely right physically the second half of the season. And, you know, I tweeted earlier in the year when she had that big opener, like, I'm buying the Sabrina breakthrough season. And then through 2 weeks, it was like, or 3 weeks, it was like, oh, well, I guess it's not going to be this year for Sabrina. And then all of a sudden it is. And she's, you know, threatening a triple double every single game. So I guess Skylar, Kelsey, Sabrina of those top three. And then Sloot was, you know, probably weighing more on her past performance. I don't think she's been quite at that level so far this season, but, you know, obviously has proven it over a long period of time in this league, including last year's title run.
So Sloot, yeah. So Vandersloot over who were the people that are really pushing Vandersloot there?
Jackie Young and then Ryan Howard, okay. Which is an interesting case as a rookie.
Yeah. So I mean, the Ryan Howard thing was hard for me because I'm with you on the whole past experience thing. Like, it's tough to ignore what Vandersloot has done, and especially coming off what should have been, well, in my opinion, should have been a Finals MVP case in the Finals last year. I think it weighs in, but man, I just really like what Ryan Howard's done. She was on my cut line too. I had Jackie Young actually ahead of Vandersloot because of what I said earlier. So what pushed Sloot over the top other than that past performance? What this year has she done to kind of, you know, put herself in the conversation with Jackie?
Yeah, I think that was the main thing. And just Jackie Young missing a couple of games lately, you know, was maybe a slight factor. But to me, starter versus reserve isn't a huge distinction since, you know, everybody's going to be in the game.
I think Sloot's hurt to a certain extent with her all-star resume because of the depth that Chicago now have. So you don't see the same level of raw numbers that would have pushed her forward a couple of years ago because Parker takes away from her assists because so much of the offense runs through her now. You got Meeseman and Copper piling up scoring numbers as well. So that pushes her a little bit down the list from where she might have been before when she's like compiling double-digit assists game after game.
Have her in your group of six?
Yeah, she's absolutely on my list, and I have her certainly in the game.
Let's finish out your two here. And I have another player throw out who I'm pretty sure is not on Richard's starting line. So you had your group of six now to pick from.
Yes.
So after hearing everything we've talked about, give me your other two guard starters.
I take Ionescu and Diggin Smith to go with Plum and Gray.
Fair enough. Yeah. I think Skylar is pretty much a lock. Although is she in this top? At the moment, she is not an all-star starter, according to the voting as of June 10th.
That doesn't necessarily surprise me because everyone's going to vote for Taurasi if they're focusing on Phoenix.
And it's, sorry, this is only 50%. The fan vote's only 50%. Yeah. So we have 25%. Is it 25% to the media and then 25% to the players? Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe Skylar gets in that way because I'm with you guys that she deserves it. So we only have one difference between you guys and the guards. All right. And now, besides outside of just like the fan voting aspect of this, are those three locks? You think Plum, Sabrina, and Skylar are locks to be starters if this was chosen based on just performance?
I mean, I think it is somewhat debatable. I agree with Richard that there's probably a group of about seven players that I think you can take four from. So I don't know how many locks there are after. I think Skylar Diggins-Smith is probably, you know, like I said, tops among that because she's just kind of got the broadest argument, but I don't know how many locks there are.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that there's, so I would say there are eight, like I said, that I have the list of eight that I think are in the game, but which ones are the four starters? I think you could make a case for most of the group.
Okay, I'm going to throw out another player here that probably wasn't a starter for me, but I put her up here just for inflammatory reasons. Ariel Atkins. So Atkins, obviously, she hasn't quite taken the step forward on offense to me, just because I expect a lot from her. But she is at the head of the best defense in the WNBA with the Washington Mystics. I think she's probably the biggest reason if we're assigning assigning blame, or what's the opposite of blame?
Credit.
Credit. There it
credit.
Is.
Credit.
There it is. I went to school for English stuff. But if we're assigning credit here, I think Atkins takes the lion's share of the credit defensively. She's been a motor offensively. She's been doing a ton for them, both sides of the ball. And I get to watch every game that she plays in. So maybe I'm a little bit biased, but I think she definitely has a case to be in that starter category. And I had her in there. I had her in there with Plum, Sabrina, Young, and Atkins, because I wanted to be different. But I think Ariel Atkins definitely deserves at least some looks as far as a starter goes.
I don't think that's unreasonable. I ranked my reserves in terms of like who were the three guards and the four front court and then the four wild cards. So my next tier of three guards were, as we mentioned, Howard, Young, and then Atkins was the third. Okay. One.
Atkins is one of my eight. Yeah. I mean, one thing you didn't mention even is she's shooting 40% from 3-point range. So especially next to Natasha Cloud, who is as much of a shooter as she's ever been in her entire career.
But what about that first game? Ugh.
Yeah. Atkins has every reason to expect to be at this game one way or another. I'm not sure. I doubt she'll start because she doesn't have the popular reputation to get the fan vote. I wouldn't have thought, but I would think she'll get in from the coaches in the reserves.
Yeah, I'd be very surprised if the coaches don't pick her, because I think every coach in WNBA has to be aware of what's happening with Ariel Atkins on the defensive side of the ball at the very least. The only thing that I really want to see from Ariel is her to get to the rim. She like has a great drive and then she'll just stop and pull up and she hits the shot. She hits the shot with enough regularity that it's not a terrible shot. But I do want, if she got to a rim more, I think she'd be kind of a lock because she'd be scoring substantially more points. That's neither here nor there. So Atkins would be my other starter. So we have a really good, really solid starting guards here that kind of track with the fan voting, other than Sue Bird and Jewel Lloyd being in there. And Jewel, I'm sure we'll talk about her and when we get to the reserves. So those are our guards. Let's move down to the front court. Richard, give me your first front court starter. Well, I think hold on. We know at least two of the front court starters.
I mean, we have three.
I think I think three are dead certs. Yeah, we have Jonquel Jones, we have Asia Wilson, and we have Breanna Stewart.
And those are three locks for me. Although at the moment, again, Jonquel Jones is not in the top 10 of fan voting, but we're all in on. We can all agree, Jonquel Jones, Breanna Stewart, Asia Wilson, right?
We can ignore the populace, yes.
we can ignore the populace, much like many American politicians would like to. We're going Stewie, Jones, and Wilson. Anything you guys want to add on any of those players?
They're very good at basketball.
They're all really, really good, yeah.
I'd say so. Of those three, I mean, I know we'll probably have to talk about this for MVP at some point. It feels like Asia's kind of made the bigger leap this year, or am I just kind of wanting to say that because her team's so good?
I mean, compared to last season, I think that's probably fair because I don't think she had a legitimate MVP case last year as she did 2 years ago. So relative to that, and she does this year. So relative to that, I guess that's probably true.
And I think maybe there's been more of a story around Wilson because of Hammond coming in and changing the system in Vegas to a certain extent. That's made it more interesting to look at them as something different from what we've seen in the past. Whereas Connecticut, maybe Jonquel Jones has kind of done things a little more quietly than we've seen in the past because they've got, again, so much talent surrounding her, especially in that front court. She hasn't had to jump out at you quite as much. So yeah, that's been a little quieter. And Stewart is Stewart. We've seen her do this stuff for a lot of years now. Whenever she's healthy, you get the same stuff.
But I think you can make the case this is the best she's ever played so far. Like, she's been more aggressive as a scorer than she's been in the past. Yeah, I mean, she's had to carry a slightly heavier load on offense for the Storm. Obviously, Sue isn't quite the player that she was in the past and, you know, has missed some time this year due to illness. It's funny, you know, when you worry about Sue Bird staying healthy at age 41, I don't think anyone meant like illness was going to be the reason that she was going to miss several games in the first half of the season. Fortunately, she's through that now. And, you know, she remains as efficient as ever. Her defense this year, the other thing, like, I believe she's number two in the league in steals per game, which is pretty remarkable, or maybe number one, which is pretty remarkable for a front court player. So all of that, I think, from a statistical standpoint, I think she's actually playing at a higher level than she has in a regular season, even when she won MVP in 2018, even if the team is no longer at that level.
Where is she on steal rate? Okay, sorry. I was going to look up the steals per game.
Yeah, they mentioned that, I think, in the broadcast the other day. That's the first I knew her steal rate was high.
She is second
behind
Brittany Sykes. Tied with Emma Mieseman. Fascinating stuff.
Huh.
That's really weird.
Emma Mieseman, who got ripped to bits by Nelissa Smith the other night. No, so she whether she's, steals doesn't always mean great defense, as we know.
Yeah, that was not great. Although Brittany Sykes has a, sorry, this is an aside. I was just looking this up. Brittany Sykes has a 3.7 steal rate at the moment, which would be the highest since like 2018, I want to say. It's very good, which, I mean, it's not that surprising from her, but I was just something I was thinking about with Brittany Sykes. She's on my way down list. Like in the universe, she's down there though.
Yeah, I did not spend very long thinking about Sparks for this particular debate, I have to admit.
Well,
hopefully at least one.
Yeah, we got to talk about it. Yeah.
I said, a little bit, not long.
And two, technically, if we're going to look at the fan voting. Let's start with the rest of the front court there. So our front court, obviously, John Cole Jones, Breanna Stewart, Asia Wilson, those three players should be starters. I hope they're starters. We'll see what happens. So who's your next front court player? Richard, I started asking you a question. So who's your next front court player after those three? Alyssa Thomas. Why?
Because, I mean, she started the season absolutely on fire in terms of production. She's actually tailed off a little bit in terms of raw numbers, but that's partly because they're now asking her to basically play power forward and point guard half the time. She does everything for them. She still can't shoot, and it still doesn't matter. And she's running the offense on a lot of the time to the extent that Heidemann can't get back off the bench in the second half. And Connecticut have been very good. The defense is still good. I think she deserves to be there, basically. The numbers support it as well. The advanced numbers like her a lot more than someone like Dawana Bonner playing next to her. I think she's in. I think she'll definitely be in the game. Whether she'll start might be up in the air.
I agree with that. Also depends which numbers, since Warp has always been very high on Dawana Bonner and not as high on Alyssa Thomas. So I had a group of five players kind of after those three locks in the front court. And I didn't have Alyssa Thomas. I had her kind of like a slight notch below that, although also clearly an all-star. So I went back and forth a lot on this group. I guess I would say next to these, again, from a legacy, like considering past performance and a not putting that much weight on playing time standpoint, Elena Delladon is probably the next of this group for me.
Yeah, and EDD has had a heck of a return season outside of the various times where she's missed games, as we talked about earlier, and the one game where she actually got hurt in the game. But why does EDD get over that hurdle of missing games, and just like, what do you think of what she's been doing this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think just she's been playing at, you know, not quite probably the MVP level that when we last saw her healthy back in 2019 and the Mystics were winning the title, but very close to it. And, you know, from that standpoint of like, if we're picking a team to win a game today, I would probably want her for that one game over anybody else who, you know, maybe is more valuable over the course of a full season.
And especially if that game's against the Connecticut Sun. She loves playing the Sun for some reason. I don't understand why. But
her and Meesum in both.
They just really enjoy that situation. The Sun did not enjoy losing in Washington, just for the record. They were not having fun in the post-game press conference. Richard, did you have EDD, or should we have a little debate here?
I did not. I think probably mostly because of the number of games she's missed. I think that's one where 7 out of 18 was enough to knock her down at least a notch for me and take her out of the starters, but I would have her in the game, absolutely.
Did either of you guys have Dawana Bonner in your starter?
Not as a starter.
Okay. I did, mainly for, again, inflammatory purposes. But it's also because I've had one big complaint about Dawana Bonner for the entirety of the time I've watched the WNBA. And this year, she has fixed that to a certain extent with her threes. She's hitting 36% of them, which is frankly enough for me.
That's small sample size randomness. That's going to come back down.
Come back down already. Like 2 weeks ago, she was at like 45%. I was like,
I mean, I feel like we're seeing a few less of the 25 footers from her this year. Isn't that fair?
That might be fair. Yeah. Maybe they've talked her out of that given, you know, the number of other options she has around her. It's like, you can shoot from 30 feet or you might be able to pass it to Breonna Jones for a layup under the hoop. So, yeah.
I think she's just been more efficient. She's been less, she does less of the reckless stuff that sometimes got her into trouble in both Phoenix and earlier in Connecticut. So I like that. When you cut out something that I dislike in your game
and
you're playing
that.
At that level, I think she belongs in conversation.
If you've read my column the last couple of weeks, you'll have seen that I've enjoyed sort of looking at the on-off numbers for a lot of players. On-off does not like Dawana Bonner
really
this season, in that they get, I mean, according to those numbers, they get a lot worse when she's on the court. Their better lineups are when she comes out and they go big with Breonna Jones in the middle, Jonquel Jones, Alyssa Thomas, and guards. So we're going to talk, that'll come up later on with a couple of players as well. There's one or two that those numbers really, really don't like, that will still be considered all-star candidates based on production and raw numbers.
Yeah, okay. I think that's a case where the small sample size can be a really big factor, especially someone like Bonner who missed, you know, a particular set of games at the start of the season coming back late from international. And she's like barely played with Jasmine Thomas, right? Since Thomas's injury about coincided with Bonner's return, right?
Yeah. I'm not sure they played many minutes together, if any. No, I get you. I get you on the on-off because I like the on-off numbers too, but I also think it is really low sample size. And also because they're kind of force feeding that lineup of with Courtney Williams kind of at the one, then Bonner at the two, and then their three bigs down low. And I think that's a bit suboptimal, even though it's their five best players. Maybe they figure it out at some point, but I think that may be factoring into there. But I think it's a fair point to bring up that she is not necessarily the most important part of that team doing well, especially at this point. Just wanted to throw Dawana Bonner out there while we were talking about Alyssa Thomas and EDD. Okay, so let's move on to your fifth big starters out of six. Richard, who's your fifth big here? Sound unsure.
Well, yeah, again, I had eight front court players who are in, and four who I had in as starters. So then the last two I'm picking from four again.
I was in the same boat. I kept like the backcourt starters, the guard starters were pretty easy for me to settle on for. The front court starters, I went back and forth as I was writing down names multiple times.
So shall I give you my next four and we can argue over which ones might be in?
Sure.
Okay, the four I had after Alyssa Thomas, Jones, Wilson and Stewart were Candace Parker, Jackie Young, because I had her in the front court.
Which you can't do, just for the record.
Necker Agumake and Sylvia Fowles.
Okay.
So that's interesting. I didn't really seriously consider Fowles that much just because I think she's probably not going to be healthy to play in the game anyway. And it sounds like she might not be. You know, kind of my working assumption at this point is she's probably not going to play again this season. Like, obviously, in terms of, you know, when she is healthy, without question in this group. So my four were Ogumike and Parker the same. And then the other Connecticut player that we've alluded to, I had her ahead of both Bonner and Thomas. Breonna Jones, I think, has been like on a permanent basis, the second best Sun player this season. I guess it was only, and then Emma Miesman was the fourth player that I had in consideration here. And I had her written in for a while before eventually I scratched her out and I ended up going with Agumake and Parker from this group.
Oh man, it would be really cool if those two were on the same team. I had Miesman in my starting group until you guys talked me down from the ledge of EDD starting because of her the injury stuff. So I agree on NECA too. So we got Parker and NECA for Kevin. Which way should we go here? Let's go with NECA. Why is NECA a starter for you despite her team's performance so far this year?
I mean, that's not something I pay any attention to, although obviously I didn't end up with a lot of players from bad teams because there's a reason that those teams aren't doing as well. I mean, she's been The Rock, because she's the one player who stuck around in LA when there was the mass exodus a couple of years ago, that saw two players we've talked about as all-star starters leave in the same offseason. And, you know, is just playing at his high level as ever, extremely efficient as a scorer, strong rebounder. Like, you know, her numbers are not that far off, I think, from Jonquel Jones's this season. So that was kind of the key factor for me.
What about you, Richard? Have you made your decision yet listening to this?
I mean, I'm happy to go with Necker and Parker as the next two.
Considering you can't vote for one of the players that you put on
the... you keep telling me that Young doesn't count. Yeah.
It's not our rules.
They set the rules up and I'm following them. They told me I can pick four guards and six front court players. That's what I did.
I mean, it will be interesting to see what they do with the coaches' vote if they're limited to those positions. I felt kind of obligated to stick with the positions they listed.
some coaches definitely just writing Jackie Young in the forward. Well, do the coaches vote? The coaches don't vote for the starters. They just get to pick the reserves.
They vote the reserves, yeah.
Well, in the reserves, they don't have a positional, do they?
No,
do
it is. It is. It's three guards, four front court, and then four wild cards. So that makes up a significant part of the team.
Oh, wow. I thought the coaches could just pick whoever you want.
Five front court, four wild cards, because those don't add up to 12 before.
So we have three. You can only pick three guards, five front court, four wild cards.
Correct.
Yeah. Wow. I did not know that. I should have done a little more research into what the coaches are doing, because I picked people whoever I want. I think I may have ended up with the right distribution, though. Perhaps.
I mean, it's so many wild cards, it's hard not to. It's not like the NBA ballots, it's for the reserves, it's four guards, like six front court, and then only two wild cards. You can get in trouble if there's a lot of deserving guards there, but harder in this format.
Also, if Jackie Young gets in as whatever. So assume you can't vote for Jackie Young, Richard. You're good with Parker. And well, tell me about fouls, because Kevin already explained about fouls. Why do you think it's not as important to consider the injury stuff?
Well, it's kind of what we were saying right at the start, in that Kevin is thinking more of a overview. And I'm sort of saying right now she's played 12 of 16 games, which is pretty similar to the number of games that have been missed by a bunch of other players. So as of this minute, I think she's still in based on the performance of what we've seen so far this season. So I would certainly have her on the roster, whether she's a starter or not, you can argue over. And then she would be replaced by somebody.
Admittedly, it's hard internally for me to justify having Deladon as a starter and not having Fouls on the roster at all. I mean, probably should just
play
pick
more
her
games. Yeah.
Let her get replaced.
Right now. Yeah. That was my thing too, is like, I took them both off for a second, and then I did end up with having Fouls off the list. My list got I was doing a lot of stuff right before we got on. I think if you have EDD, I think you kind of have to have Fouls on there just for the honorary spot. And also, like, there is the aspect, not that we're very sentimental on this podcast, but I kind of want Sylvia Fouls to be a part of it, to get that last all-star nod, even though she probably isn't going to play.
I mean, there's also even an extra level, back in Chicago.
Back in the city that drafted her, yeah.
Yeah, so I think it'd be really cool. I wish she could play, though. If she could play for sure, I'd put her on there. But if she's not going to play, then I can see the argument of not having her on there. And then here's the other thing, because I had Emma starting for a bit. Why Candace over Emma, Kevin?
Again, went back and forth on this one. I mean, Candace's level of play for such a long period of time in this league is quite high. I think Miesemann's probably been the better player so far this season, but it's also perhaps the highest level that she's played at in the W. So, you know, maybe want to see her do it for a full season before we quite put her at that level. But she's certainly been an all-star player in this league, a really important piece of that Washington title team, the finals MVP. So, you know, again, like just a hair behind the other two for me.
Richard, did you not consider Emma?
She's on my bench. Right, on the bench. I had Parker ahead. I think partly because she's more of the system in Chicago, in that she facilitates as well, whereas Misamune is more of a traditional post player, more of a finisher. So Parker seems more involved in what they're doing when she's obviously she's played a couple of games less because she's had the injury recently. So I think you can certainly make the argument either way. But yeah, Parker was in for me, and Misamune would have been on the bench.
Okay. I think that's, yeah. I was taking just like this year, I was kind of just focused in. So I was like, yeah, Emma's been playing better. So I put Emma up there. But I think it's totally fair, especially at home. We kind of need Candace Parker in the game. And then I do want to talk about Bree Jones, but we've kind of gone a long time. So we'll get to Bree Jones and we talk about the reserves. Is everyone cool with that?
Yep.
All right. Let's start with some reserves. I think we have some of the people you already mentioned. Richard, who is your fourth card, by the way? In the start. I have it. Cool. All right. So your reserve guards. Give me your top three reserved guards, so then we can fill in that little niche there.
Well, in the end, I went with Plum, Gray, and Escu. So my reserves, I would have, there were four left on my, so Atkins, Van der Sloot, Lloyd, and Arike Ogunbowale would be my next four.
Atkins, Sloot, Arike. No, we haven't talked about Arike.
I don't have Arike on my team.
Interesting. Why not?
I mean, she's been extremely inefficient this season. She keeps getting rejected.
And every
games.
Season.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not a fluke that she's been, but it kind of stands out more now that Alicia Gray is playing better than her on offense. Like, do we really need Arike to be taking all these bad shots now that Alicia Gray is this good? They've got some decent front court options. You know, Marina Mabry, when she's been healthy, is more efficient. Like, I'm not sure that that's necessary in the same way it was her first couple seasons in the league.
Well, it's necessary from the standpoint that they just signed the max extension. And they definitely need her to be on the top of the scoring heap. But Richard, why is she in your all-star team then?
I mean, I get what Kevin is saying. Obviously, the inefficiency bothers me a lot of the time as well. But she is still a core key to their offense, and she does still produce at a remarkable level for an offensive player. It's not like none of these shots go in, even though she is jacking up ridiculous shots from 25 feet with defenders in her face. A lot of them go in, and what she does then drives a lot of what else they do, because defenses do still have to pay a lot of attention to her. And we see her scoring, like, defenders also have to close out on her because of those shots, and she's willing to go straight past them and quick enough to go straight past them. So, yeah, I still think she has a case to be in this game, but there are two other perimeter players in Dallas who also have a case to be on this reserve list.
That's interesting, because when you had your tweet the other day, Richard, about the controversial omissions, that I immediately thought of me not having Arike. So I was wondering if it was her for you, but I guess it's other people in your case.
Well, okay.
Yeah, we'll see who's left once I finally make up my mind by the end of this. Yeah.
Yeah, and so the other thing on Arike, as you alluded to, Kevin, is just stop kicking the ball, man. Just stop kicking the ball. The ball, just don't touch your foot to the ball.
It's cool that you, I mean, it's one thing to stop the ball with your foot. That's cool. Like, when it ends up 10 rows in the stands, that's not I just accidentally stopped it the wrong way. Sorry, I'm not buying that argument.
Yeah, I mean, her problem with saying I'm a soccer player first is, in that case, she's a really bad soccer player.
Right. Exactly.
That's why she's playing basketball now.
Yeah, she's got what we call the first touch of a brick wall in that in that game where she managed to punt one into the stands. Yeah, that didn't
if you do
well.
It every time and it's never gone 10 rows into the stands, that makes me think that maybe you were pissed off because your team was trailing at the halftime of the game and you were playing terribly. I don't know.
It certainly looked like she kicked the ball. Then she did it in another game, like two games after that. Like, I forget what it was. Like, it was a foul off the ball came rolling to her, and she tried to tip it up to herself and it went flying towards half court. I was like, stop. Just don't touch the ball with your foot. We're gonna say that that's why she's not on your team, Kevin. Just the message gets through. She's not on Kevin's all-star team because she's kicked the ball too many times. I'm sorry, Richard. Who was your fourth
sometimes
guard?
Threw the ball too many times, right? Or whatever it was at the LA ejection, whatever she said.
That one, she just kicked the stanchion, which you shouldn't do.
Right. Yeah. So no kicking, period.
Yeah. And it broke. I would love to know whether LA sent her like a bill for busting their digital signage. Yeah.
No. Yeah. It was very, that's like a dangerous kick too. That's going to hurt your foot. All right. We can leave Arike's kicking to the side. Hopefully she doesn't do that anymore. But Richard, I'm sorry. Who is your fourth guard there? I didn't catch it.
The last four were Sloot, Atkins, Lloyd, Arike.
Yeah, Jewel Lloyd. I mean, we'll talk about it. I do want to hear Kevin's next three reserve guards, or however many you want to mention here.
As I already mentioned, I had Atkins, Howard, Young in this group. So, I mean, that probably the fact that Richard isn't considering Jackie as a guard is a factor in this, but I had Jewel Lloyd a notch below this, not dramatically below this, mm-hmm. but she has not played as well, I think, this season as she did last year when she was all WNBA first team.
Yeah, her efficiency has gone down a little bit, so I'm with that. I really like Jewel Lloyd, but I have her in that same group that you do, Kevin. But Ryan Howard's interesting, because you know, throughout this podcast you've mentioned the previous performance and how that has affected your vote. Obviously we don't have the previous performance for Ryan Howard because she's a rookie. Why is she get on your list?
Yeah, I'm sort of more willing to buy it because there's not a track record for playing kind of at a sub all-star level. She was the number one pick, projected really well statistically, not quite this well statistically. Like, I didn't expect this from day one, but you know, she's been in the top 10 in WAR pretty much all season. So like, you could even make a case for her as a starter probably.
This is another one where it depends on which stats you're looking at, because on-off stats hate Ryan Howard in that they get like 20 points worse when she's when she's on the court.
Really?
Yeah. Her net rating difference is minus 21.1.
That is wild.
That's crazy, dude. Because like, a small difference I could understand just because of whatever. That's an insane stat. I just, you know, scoring has been so impressive from day one.
As a team, Atlanta are good defensively and bad offensively. So you can therefore either make the case that they could be dreadful offensively whether Howard was playing or not. Or you could say that even to be this bad, they've needed her. Basically, she is their offense.
After you get him, Cheyenne Parker, I don't know if she'll get mentioned later in this pod, but after her and Howard, it drops off pretty quickly, their shot creation.
Hmm. Yeah, and the thing is, though, I mean, like, how I think it also comes down to how much of this turnaround for Atlanta you buy and how much you attribute it to Howard, because they're about to, their next win will match their win total from 2019 and surpass their 2020 and surpass their 2021. Obviously 2020 is a weird year, but they're about to, you know, basically hit their win total from the last 3 years in game 15 of the season, 16 of the season. I think that's huge. And I think that was kind of my reasoning here was like, well, this team is so much better and she's there now and she's a big part of it. So I wanted to give her, you know, the nod because of that. So are you saying you don't really buy that turnaround, Richard, and or you don't really attribute it to Howard?
I mean, they've also lost their last four in a row and are going backwards. I think she's been very impressive. But yeah, I don't particularly buy the turnaround for the team in that I do think they're going to probably end up in the lottery anyway. But they've been good. And as I said about her when she was coming out of college, I like the way she fills the stat sheet even beyond being a scorer. You get rebounds, you get assists, you get steals and blocks to a certain extent as well. She does what you want her to do even beyond just being a scorer. She does need to develop as more than just a three-point shooter. A lot of her scoring has come from outside and from them running sort of curls and flares and things like that for her. If she can't score more inside, then she does become the deluxe version of Shekinah Strickland, which is not what you want from a number one pick.
Wow. But yeah, cut that. That's gonna make a good clip. The deluxe version? Come on, Richard.
Like I said, I expect that there to be much more than that, but she needs scoring inside the arc and to be more efficient inside the arc, which we've seen in spurts, but not consistently yet. But you don't, I mean, it's her first season, first half of her rookie season.
It is a lot of pull-up long twos.
I would also mention that, as we've gone through and you've criticized me for many times already, she's a front court player as far as I'm concerned. So I wasn't looking at her as a guard. She's a three, for God's sake.
This is why I had a harder time picking front court reserves, because you just went with all the players who are listed as guards. I mean, yes, I agree. She should also be in the front court.
Well, let's go.
Which also applies to Kalia Copper is listed as a guard too.
Yeah, I don't know who. Does any one person come up with this?
It comes out of the league. Who the hell knows which person at the league office is doing it?
Let's stop here and solve this problem. Should we just get rid? I mean, obviously the easiest solution is to get rid of positional distinctions altogether. I don't see a downside to that. So should we just get rid of the positions?
I mean, I could see the starting lineup getting a little front court heavy in the W, but
you'd fix it fairly quickly by bringing in. I think when you're picking 22 players, right, or even more than 22, eventually you'd have enough perimeter and post one way or another. You're not going to end up with 20 post players.
And 20 post players in an All-Star game sounds delightful. I'd watch that.
I'd rather have really 20 fun guards in an All-Star game.
Either way.
Or guards versus front court players would be kind of interesting.
That'd be fun. Well, I don't know how much fun that would be, actually, thinking about it.
It'd be an interesting experiment. And right. I mean, yeah, All-Star games are usually boring as hell. So anything interesting, why not?
I mean, Don Nelson has said that like his love of small ball was inspired by when he was with the Celtics, Red Auerbach would have the guards play the front court players, the bigs in games, and the guards always won because the ball handling won out.
Huh. This would be interesting. All right, WNBA, we're clipping this too to send over. That we found the solution.
The problem with it is they'd have to decide who the hell's a guard and who the hell's a front court player. And they get this wrong half the time, as we've been saying. So,
I mean, maybe that would even things out a little bit.
All right, front court. Let's get your five reserve front court players, or however you want to do this, Kevin. But just your reserve front court.
Yeah, so I did have a group of five. We've talked about a lot of them already. Bonner and Jones, both from Connecticut, and Thomas, I guess three Connecticut players among my five front court reserves. Emma Mieseman is the fourth. And then the fifth is where things get interesting. And that's why I had another player who's playing at a higher level than they have before, but given their age, it's probably to be expected, which is Ezzie Magbegor is my fifth front court reserve.
I love the Ezzie pick. Explain it.
Yeah, I mean, she's, you know, it's funny because this didn't exist until last year, but the concept of the big three in Seattle of Bird, Stewart, and Lloyd, and like Ezzie Magbegor has played as well as probably two of those three players this season. So it's kind of funny that still exists. Like her shot blocking has been completely dominant at that end of the court. Richard highlighted that, you know, recently in his roundup, and offensively she's doing important things for them in terms of, you know, her ability to move without the ball. She's making a few threes this season, which is very exciting to see. She very much looks like a star coming into her own at this point.
I'm with it. And she also, you know, we talked a lot about Stewie's defense, and Stewie has been a great defender for many years, so whatever. But I think Ezzie this year has really unlocked what Stewart's doing in terms of being able to clean up everything on the backside as Stewart blitzes those pick and rolls. She's been huge for that, and they are the second best defense by net defensive rating, correct? Yeah, they are. Second best defense by defensive rating in the league right now. And I think those two are the two that you can really point to as doing an outstanding job. So I really like that pick. I like Ezzie being in the reserve front court. Let's see. Do we have, well, here, Richard, give me your five front court.
Well, we're back to how many of my players counted in the first place.
Oh, just say them. It's fine.
My top eight were Thomas Jones, Parker, Jackie Young, Wilson, Stewart, Ogwumike, and Bowles. And then my front court reserves after that, Breonna Jones, Meeseman, Deladon, and Alicia Gray, who again I would count as a three, but may have been a guard on the official ballot. I don't know.
I think she was a guard.
Yeah, I'm not sure where she was.
I have it here, I think. She is a guard.
Of course.
Inevitably.
So besides this being an illegal pick, I think I like these. I think Alicia Gray is really interesting. We didn't talk about Bree Jones, so we should get back to her because Kevin, you said that she's the second best player on Connecticut so far. I think that kind of goes against the conventional thinking of this team. So explain to me why she's the second best player on the team.
I mean, I think Richard can chip in. He's looked at the net rating more, mm-hmm. but I'm pretty sure they're playing their best basketball when she's on the court. I mean, making 59% of twos, extremely efficient scorer, you know, dominant offensive rebounder. I think she, like I said, I assume the numbers back this up. I think the best version of the Sun is with Breonna Jones at center, even though she's not started, which is wild.
Yeah, I mean, among their players who play significant minutes, Jonquel's top and Breonna's the next behind her in terms of on-off numbers. I had Alyssa Thomas starting, but I did have Breonna Jones ahead of Bonner, certainly. She's been exceptional. She's a starter. She's going to win sixth woman of the year, assuming she stays where she is at the minute, and it's not going to be close. She's phenomenal in terms of her finishing ability inside. It reminds me of Crystal Langhorn back in the day at her peak in terms of the footwork and what she can just do in there, whether anyone's trying to stop, whether they're focusing on her or not. She's been great, and she's going to get seriously paid at the end of this season by somebody, assuming she's willing to go and play somewhere other than Connecticut, because they'd have to move somebody in order to pay her. But yeah. And the
whatever team I get in the mock off season, I don't even know. I presumably I'll help this form, but whatever other team is going to max Breonna Jones, I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
good to know as the player agent. I'll mark that one down.
You don't even have to worry about that one.
The development from her first couple of years in the league is unreal. Because there were like 2 to 3 seasons where if they cut her, no one would have batted an eyelash. And she stuck around. She's one of the players who, rather than developing at home on her own, went to Europe and has been a star over there as well and developed significantly. And yeah, she's been great.
It's funny to hear you say go over to Europe, since you're in Europe. They're coming to Europe.
She's come to us. Yeah.
Not many of them go to England, in fairness. So they're going to the continent.
Not many people you've ever heard of come to play in England. No.
Yeah, they're going continental. Let's get your... So, Richard, I have 3 more spots for you. Does that sound right?
I mean, potentially.
are you a pick 24 for the roster too? I mean, if you're not sticking to the guard front court, why stick to the number either?
I mean, I did stick to the numbers as far as I was concerned.
Richard's numbers.
I mean, the way I ended up was, like I said, I had 8 guards and 8 front court that I had in, which left me picking 6 for the final group, where I had I was picking 6 from 8 basically at the end. I had Breonna Jones, Meeseman, Deladon, Gray with the top 4 of that group in, and then I had 2 left from De'Erica Hamby, Kelsey Mitchell, Marina Mabry, and Natasha Howard.
Okay. Pick 3 of them. So you had like 5 players listed there. Pick 3 of them.
It was 2 from 4 by my numbers. I would probably take...
Oh, because you have fouls too, right?
I have fouls in, yeah.
Okay, there we go. All right, that was my... So you have 2. Yeah, you have 2. Pick 2 of them.
Probably take Hamby and... Mabry, I think.
Okay, man, Mabry. That works out. Well, actually, it works. You work out because now Alicia Gray and Jackie Young are in the wild card spots, and Derek Ahambi and Emma.
I think it might all loop back around and it eventually fit in. Yeah,
that does in fact work. Congratulations, Richard. You have a legal ballot. Explain to me the Mabry pick. I think she's played really well. I just haven't. You know, I think that would come off as a surprise to a lot of people. Explain to me why you went with her.
I think Dallas are better, and she's been a big part of it. She's playing the point guard for them a lot, even though that's maybe not where you want her by choice. I think she plays it because Arike needs to be on the court as far as they're concerned, so they have to work out how to get those two into a backcourt, or you're cutting into their minutes significantly. And she's done the job. She scores efficiently. She gives them that edge that a lot of teams need, in that she's always feisty. She's playing hard. She's
in techs.
She's willing to stand up to anybody. Yeah, I like the way she plays, and she's produced. And it's another player who's developed out of a position where she wasn't even necessarily going to make a roster when she was a rookie. And as yeah, come out of nowhere, and he's going to get paid at the end of the year.
Where are the stats on Tex?
No, they're in the press section, which is why I tend to tweet them out quite a lot, because they're not public anywhere.
So is Marina first now?
No, Taurasi's got 5 and is leading the league. Marina's right behind her.
Taurasi is almost to the Taurasi line.
Yes.
A player that did not appear on your ballot.
Yeah, Richard. I figured we'd get to that. Yeah,
and the other UConn guard that's somewhat important, also not on your ballot. All right, let's get Kevin's last 4. So I have 4 wild card spots for you, Kevin. Give me your.
So I had a pair of grays here. I had both Alicia and Chelsea, as we've talked about earlier, mm-hmm. with Chelsea Gray, and both of them really. I also went with Hamby for this spot, and then Jewel Lloyd was my 4th.
Okay, easy enough. So did we complete the Vegas run here?
Yep.
Yeah, we did. We all did. Now, 5 players in the All-Star game.
Yeah, I'm not sure Hamby will get in, because I think the coaches might balk at putting 5 in, mm-hmm. once they're picking the reserves. So we'll see whether that actually comes to pass.
Wow.
Has that ever happened before? I assume at some point it must have happened with the Lynx starting 5, right?
I think somebody definitely got it. I think Connecticut did it way back when, but one of them was in as a replacement. So I'm not sure if anyone's ever done all 5 in the initial teams, but I think it's definitely been done, including replacements.
Kevin, who's your 5th there?
I only have 4, right?
Yeah, 4. Sorry. It was the Grays, Hamby, and who?
Jewel Lloyd.
Jewel Lloyd. Okay. We already talked about Jewel. Man, yeah, I was gonna ask you guys. I figured you guys knew about the whole the starting lineup in the All-Star game. It happened in the NBA, right?
I can think of 4, because there was the time that Detroit, they had 4, and then they played like Melo was the 5th, because you know, the Pistons could have drafted him instead of Darko. Remember that lineup? I'm struggling to think of when in Atlanta had 4 the year that they were surprisingly good under Bud. And it was everyone but Damari Carroll. I can't specifically think of 5.
So we'll look that up. We'll get the research on that.
I mean, in some ways it's easier in the WNBA, because right. we've got a lot fewer teams, and you know, we're still trying to come up with nearly as many All-Stars.
So I guess it begs the question though, like have the Aces been dominant, like that dominant, to really warrant 5 All-Stars?
I mean, Connecticut, we have 4. So it's not exactly like, and I think those are the 2 teams that have really separated themselves from the rest of the field so far this year.
I have 3 from Connecticut, as a group, 4. Yeah.
And you'll have Bonner. So it's 3, but 3, I mean, 3 is still a lot. I don't know. 5 just sounds so much bigger. It's just like, that is a lot of, and I think it's all deserving, because I believe I had all 5 of those players on my full list as well. So maybe we're looking at that. I thought one of you guys would go to Natasha Howard. I had Natasha Howard. I think she's been excellent in the time.
Like I said, she's right on the fringe of being in or out for me. I mean, if if Fowles is out, then she would certainly be one of the options as a replacement. And Indiana fans, the like three that continue to show up to their games, would be very disappointed that Kelsey Mitchell isn't making the game finally this year.
And she's been awesome. Kelsey Mitchell's been awesome. She's taking a step forward. It's just the team is, I can't unsee it. Some of the things that they've done, although they've been much better than we all thought they were going to be. Maybe Kelsey Mitchell, but I think Natasha Howard would be at my next pick here.
But I mean, as I tweeted about last night, that there's going to be a significant list of snubs or at least players that are considered snubs by the public at large this year, in that certainly from my group, at least, we've left out Bird, Taurasi, Charles, Cloud, Cambage, Howard, Copper, Bonner. I didn't put in Magbegor. So it's a long list. I don't have any of the rookies in my group either. There's no Howard, there's no Austin, there's no Nellis Smith. So yeah, it's a long list of players that people are going to say, how the hell did she not make the All-Star team?
Yeah, and I was going to ask about Shakira Austin, because I think she has a really good case, but I'm with you on her not being in. But Kevin, did you give any thought to players that Richard just mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, Austin might have been the next front court player if I were going to go with another one there, other than Fowles, who, again, I didn't have on my team. So maybe you can consider Fowles is on there and Hamby is the injury replacement for her, I guess, if you want to think about it that way. To me, the two hardest omissions were Ogunbowale, as we talked about, and then Taurasi. Defensively, not so much, but offensively, she's still been really good for Phoenix this season. She's not if you give her an All-Star spot this year, it's not strictly on the basis of her being Diana Taurasi.
But it could be. And then we could just have 24 players like Richard wants anyways.
Right. Yeah. And Sue's the one who, she probably played at an All-Star level last season, but this season, has not been quite to that level, but is obviously going to be in there.
Yeah, I hope they don't take away spots, like we mentioned at the top. Don't take away spots from these players that we already mentioned that have played up to that level, just to, give people a swan song. Although, I don't know if that's, necessarily the right way to go for an All-Star game, because, again, back to my first question of this whole podcast, does this actually matter? And should we just have more fun with it?
I mean, my philosophy has always been personally, I think we should pick a list of the 12 best players or 22 best players, 12, and then also pick the 22 most fun for an All-Star game. Those don't need to be the same list.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking about Chelsea Gray maybe being a starter, maybe being reserved. Chelsea Gray is the kind of player you need in an All-Star game, whether you think she deserves to be there on production and performance for a club or not. That's what you want, the look away passes, the all of that kind of stuff for an All-Star game.
And I'd probably much rather see Erica Ogunbowale in an All-Star setting than, Emma Mieseman, as awesome as she is.
And if there are any replacement players, I would expect Kalia Copper's probably going to get in, given that the game's in Chicago. So if the commissioner has to put in anyone extra, then an extra Chicago player would be the easy choice, both from needing to get them to the city costs and things like that, and for fan engagement.
Oh, and Claire Copper's having a heck of a season too.
Yeah, she's right. She's on the fringes of it anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing is, if you want to look at this in kind of in a different light, not necessarily the way Kevin's looking at it in terms of considering past performance, but one thing I've always thought about the All-Star game, I probably should have said this earlier, is it kind of should go from All-Star game to All-Star game, your performance since that All-Star game to this one. And I think if we considered it like that, Kalia Copper's in. So I'm with you, Richard. I think she probably has a really good chance to get in of the people that were not on your list or my list. She probably has the best chance to either be selected as a reserve or be that injury replacement.
Yeah, there's obviously been a lot of talk about her since her performance in the finals last year. She had a good season in Europe as well. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if she gets in one way or another.
All right, guys. That's pretty much all I got. I mean, We could have talked about some of the more ridiculous names on my universal list here, such as Brittany Sykes and Lexi Brown.
Lexi Brown?
Second in effective field goal percentage behind Sylvia Fowles this season.
Okay.
If we're going to do that list, can I throw out one of Richard's favorites?
Yeah, sure.
Rebecca Gardner is not that far off by warp.
He's really good.
I mean, I think to a certain extent, that's one of the knocks against Copper, is that how much better Chicago got with Copper replacing Gardner in lineups. There's not that much in it in terms of what changed when Copper finally arrived and took a lot of those lineup minutes. So Gardner's been good.
And then they went on like a tear right when Kalia came back though. Right? Something like that.
They did, yes. And then fell off a little bit from that. Natisha Heidemann also maybe deserves some mention here.
Yeah. The thing about Natisha Heidemann, as Richard alluded to earlier, was that she's kind of being held back in late in games for either Alyssa Thomas or my girl Nia Clouden. So we'll see how that works out by the end of the year. But she's been playing great, too. I think there's a case for a lot of different folks. I think the coaches are going to have a fascinating job. I think, obviously, the fans are going to vote for whoever the fans vote for. And I think we'll probably get a couple players that maybe on production only don't get in, but I'm guessing like Suber and Diane Taurasi are getting in via the fan vote.
And what a shame they won't tell us the individual votes for the coaches' ballots. That would be especially interesting this year to see who everyone puts in and who they leave out. But yeah, I don't think we'll be getting those.
I wish we did. Did we get a GM survey this year? We didn't even get a GM survey.
No, I don't think they put one out, no. Although, as Kevin can report, most of those aren't filled out by the GMs.
Well, look. I talked to the GM of the team when I helped fill that out one or two times.
Speaking for the team, do you think the coaches' all-star ballots are filled out by the coaches?
I think there's probably a better chance of that.
Oh, really?
I think people take that more seriously.
Yeah. Interesting.
I don't know if they're deep diving the stats on it before they do it.
Just voting for all their own players, which you absolutely should do. If you're a coach, I would vote for all of my own players.
They're not allowed. You're not allowed to vote for your own players.
I mean, honestly, what a lot of it is probably vote for the player who had a good game against you.
Mm. Player you have to prepare most for, which is fair. All right, guys. I'm not going to say all of the people that we have on our all-star rosters. That's going to be way too much. We will post this in the description, though, all the all-star rosters that we picked. You will know the starters again by the time you listen to this, but this was a fun exercise. Anything else that you guys want to mention before we go off?
If I could do a quick plug, we talked about Kelsey Plum's improvement this year. I don't know when this story is running, but hopefully sometime this week, talking about, you know, the performance coach who has helped both Plum and some of the other players we've talked about in this group. So it's something I'm very excited about running, hopefully this week.
The Aces performance coach, or just like for the around the league?
Susan Borchard, who works privately with players. So
and gets a shout out quite regularly on TV broadcasts. Yeah.
Which is why I wanted to kind of dig deeper into that story and got some really fun quotes from Plum and Sue Bird and Brianna Stewart and others.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. Richard, anything to plug?
I have the, assuming I get around to writing it at some point, the usual column coming out on Thursday morning. So yeah, I don't know what it's on yet because I haven't written it.
WNBA Dissected. It's on like a bunch of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's about the WNBA. And it's on herhoopstats.com or herhoopstats.substack.com. There we go. That's a newsletter.
Yeah.
And you should go to herhoopstats.com for all of your stats research and check out Kevin's work on ESPN. This is the Her Hoop Stats podcast. I'm Gabe. Thank you so much to KP and to Richard for joining me and picking our all-star ballots.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.